How come you didn't tell me?
Tell you what?
That you knew karate.
You never ask.
Yeah, well, where'd you learn it from?
Father.
I thought he was a fisherman.
In Okinawa, all Miyagi know two things. Fish and karate. Karate come from China, 16th century, called Te, hand. Much later, Miyagi ancestor called karate, empty hand.
I always thought it came from Buddhist temples and stuff like that.
You're too much TV.
That's what my mother tells me. Hey, you ever taught anyone?
No.
Well, would you?
Depend.
On what?
Reason.
How's revenge?
Daniel-san, you look revenge that way. Start by digging to grave.
Well, at least I have company, right?
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, your sensei for the day. And this is our fifth anniversary episode. And we're going to be moving into our sixth year. Oh my God, I can't believe it's been 5 years already. And to help celebrate with us is Sam Stepanenko.
I have nothing witty to say about either of these movies.
Oh God, you better. You better.
I have lots to say, just nothing witty. It'll come.
Well, God forbid you be entertaining.
That's not my job.
Trish Cock. Yes, it literally is your job. Trish Cocklin is also here.
Yes, sensei.
And Jeff Omega is running a bit behind, so he's hopefully will pop in on this call a little bit later, as we're going to be talking about The Karate Kid from 1984 and the remake from 2010, which, hey, let's just get the big beef of that one out of the way right now. What is wrong with that movie? What is the
Kung
one
Fu.
Thing? Yes, there is actually no karate in that movie.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It should just be Kid.
Yeah, or Kung Fu Kid.
Kung Fu Kid.
Like, what's wrong with Kung Fu Kid? I get brand recognition, but there's no karate in the movie.
No.
So, I don't think anybody would have had a beef with Kung Fu Kid. If anything, I think people reacted a little bit differently because they would have separated it from the Karate Kid franchise more. Because you look at the comments for that movie on, like, IMDb... Holy shit, people are vicious on that movie.
Yeah.
I think maybe a little unjustly so.
I was going to say a little unfairly. I mean, yeah, we'll get really into it, but I really didn't mind the remake.
No, I mean, it rates fairly strong. It's still on IMDb, and even the Rotten Tomatoes aren't too bad for it either. Yeah, there's some performance issues in there, but it's overall, I still think it's a fairly strong remake. They pay homage to the original film while still traveling its own path. It kind of does what we ask them to do.
Yeah.
So
it's got Jackie Chan.
Don't insult us by calling it The Karate Kid instead of Kung Fu Kid, because I mean, there's no karate in the movie, and that's just gonna piss people off by doing that. But clearly the skeleton of The Karate Kid is ever present in that movie, and yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about it as we get along. Man, this is a childhood favorite for us, at least for the three of us. Jeff probably wasn't born yet when the first one came out.
So young.
But a childhood favorite of ours and a retro discovery for him, I'm sure.
Yeah, I remember being a huge fan of this when I was 14, 15 years old. And certainly I have a certain amount of nostalgia for it, but I don't have the same nostalgia goggles that obviously the people who have those negative comments on IMDb have. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest challenge that everybody suffers is, well, I love this old movie and you shouldn't touch it. And they don't really look at it objectively and go, well, you know what? It doesn't stand up anymore. So maybe it was due for...
Yeah. And generally it's probably our generation that's bitching about a remake because we grew up with it and we hold it in a high esteem. I mean, it's been a while for me as well. I hadn't watched it in a very long time. So a lot of it was with fresh eyes for the first time in probably a couple decades. But the reason why old movies like this get remade is because the key demographic isn't us old guys pushing 50.
No.
It is the 20s and 30s is somethings that are going to the theater that are spending that money. And trying to get them to watch an old movie is a lot more of a struggle than getting to watch a new version of a movie that's more identifiable to them. I think Karate Kid still holds up for the most part. It doesn't feel super anachronistic anymore when you watch it. Like, it's still, a lot of it still holds, other than some fashions, lack of cell phones, and hair. For the most part, it works. You know, it's still, the whole thing kind of still stands up. And well, that was shocking how much so.
Well, you think of how much got put out into the modern vernacular, which is wax on, wax off.
Mm-hmm.
People would say that.
Yeah.
You've heard it. It was a phrase that people used simply because of this movie.
Yeah, it became part of the cultural lexicon. It spawned three more sequels. And, of course, the remake and an animated series and the Cobra Kai series that will be landing on Netflix at the end of the month here. And comic books. There's even a Legion of Superheroes character, although he was created before the movie. But, hey, DC was like, go ahead and use it.
Nice.
Yeah. So, good on Warner for going, hey. I don't actually. No. Warner probably didn't own DC that point yet. But
no, because yeah, that wasn't until like the 90s that they got that they purchased it. DC. Hey, look at me knowing comic book stuff. but yeah, I mean, it is definitely a cultural touchstone, particularly for our generation and the Gen Xers who experienced it in real time with the resurgence with Cobra Kai, that YouTube series. It's definitely sort of popped back into consciousness.
Yeah, it's resuscitated the brand. And, you know, like the Jackie Chan version from 2010 certainly had its potential to spin off. It was successful-ish. Probably not enough to warrant them to do another one, but I don't know. I was looking at the numbers for it, and it's strong. It was really strong, actually. I'm guessing they were hoping for somewhere in the 500 to 600 million. And it performed about $354 million globally, but that was off a $40 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
So that's tremendously successful. So it's interesting that didn't wind up getting a sequel. And this is before people were like, that Jaden Smith kid's really nuts.
Well,
he's still Will Smith's cute kid.
Well, that, like, honestly, I think kind of that's part of the problem is because your lead was too well known. Mm-hmm. As the son of Will Smith, so
yeah, they even managed to sneak a photo of Will Smith at the in the end credits.
Yeah. So I think that sort of, I mean, Jackie Chan, everybody knows Jackie Chan, and still would have worked with him.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of, I think you needed a more unknown lead,
which is unfortunate because you can tell that Jaden tried really hard to be able to do the physical stuff in the movie.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, he was considerably younger than Ralph Macchio when he stepped into the role. Ralph Macchio was playing a teenager as well, but he was 22 when he did the role. He certainly didn't look it. He's such a baby face, still does. But yeah, Jaden was a kid, worked really hard. You could see, like, at 12, 13, he was fucking ripped for a kid. And despite the fact his acting chops weren't quite there yet, you could see it. And he has a lot of his father's mannerisms as well when he cracks a joke or whatever.
Yeah.
So you can see a lot of his father in there. And that's a roadmap to success.
Yeah. And arguably, his kung fu was far more convincing than Ralph Macchio's.
Mm-hmm.
On karate. He looked like he knew what he was doing. And again, at 12 years old, that's really impressive.
Well, I think that you do have to up that game a little bit, too, where in the 80s, we talked a little bit about this when we did Ninja Assassin, is Americans, North Americans didn't know a whole lot about it, the subject, so you don't have to show as much to be convincing. Uh-huh. But now we've had lots of martial arts exposure, a lot more has hit mainstream, a lot more Chinese martial arts epics do cross the border, and now we've got an elevated level of action. Even through the 80s, we saw that elevate as we go from Karate Kid to like Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme. This was just prior to another martial arts resurgence. So it was still kind of early, and then it sparked a whole new martial arts subgenre for a little while.
And makes it impossible not to pretend to fight when you hear, "You're the best.
And you know what? That was originally scored for Rocky III, and they decided to go with a different song. So, and when you listen to the lyrics, you go, "Oh yeah, that would fit," because even in the song, they're talking about. There's a little bit in there where it references past fights, which of course never actually happened in this movie, but it's it works really well.
Because he got his ass kicked a few times, so that would...
Yeah, no, that's an ass kicking. That's not a fight.
Good point.
True.
And I don't know. There's a weird little internet argument now of whether Daniel had it coming or not.
You know, I was going to bring that up because I think initially, no, Johnny was being a thug.
I disagree. I disagree because he went in there to talk. He was a little aggressive, and I'm not going to say Johnny was being appropriate, but he wasn't looking for a fight. Danny's the one that's escalated that argument. It was between Allie and Johnny.
I don't know. Johnny was being aggressive. He picked up her, took her radio and smashed it. And Daniel did try to de-escalate.
He wanted her attention.
Yeah. Doesn't make it acceptable.
No.
He was being a dick.
No, I never said it was acceptable.
Right. And
but he didn't start the fight. Daniel started the fight.
Daniel tried to de-escalate it first through talking.
Yeah, he kind of started the fight. Once you start, you know, grabbing people.
I mean, I think Daniel's a bit of an asshole in this movie.
And Daniel wound up throwing the first punch. It was actually Johnny that kept evading him when Daniel was attacking.
Oh, no, I
And only until he took a punch is when he started fighting back.
Yeah, no, and I shot first.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it's funny when you start looking at it. It's like, oh, I can see people's side of that argument.
Yeah, no, Daniel is...
I mean, I was on Daniel's side through the movie. That's where the filmmakers want you to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I understand the argument that Johnny, I don't know if he was necessarily the good guy, but he wasn't entirely the bad guy either. I think that there was...
Well, I mean, that was something Miyagi puts best, is there are no bad students, there are bad teachers, and you pick up bad habits, and that carries on to the character all grown up in Cobra Kai, and misinterpretations.
Daniel is an asshole in Cobra Kai.
Well, no, I've only watched the first two episodes in preparation for this episode because I hadn't seen them before. And right now, I'd say no. Like, Daniel hasn't got all the facts, which is often the case in Karate Kid. Is he might have all the facts, but neither do we as an audience, because there are no scenes without Daniel. Like, we are hung on to his shoulders throughout the film. So we don't get to see that other point of view, which is something Cobra Kai actually does quite well.
It does.
Now, not to say Johnny's still not a dick, but he's not unrepenting dick. He's certainly looking for his own salvation. And man, to carry that kind of grudge for that long, that's destroyed that poor guy.
Both of them. I mean, you're only a couple episodes in, but
yeah.
But yeah, no, Daniel is unrelenting in Cobra Kai, in at least the first season. I haven't seen anything past that, but I've found that, yeah, I was actually sympathetic with Johnny more so than Daniel in Cobra Kai.
Well,
I
think that's supposed to be. Yeah, you're supposed to be, because, you know, now Johnny's the lead of this show.
Flipping it.
Yeah, they are flipping it, and we're seeing this privileged family of Ralph Macchio's Daniel having elevated his life with the family and the two kids and the swimming pool, and he's done really well for himself, and this also eats at poor Johnny, so who doesn't have any of those things.
Well, it was this whole thing we were discussing this a bit before, is looking at it now, like with a new lens, the Karate Kid with the sensei kind of just wants a cult. He just wants mindless zombies who will fight and do whatever he says.
Mm-hmm.
So these are kids, impressionable kids, that this big guy has like somewhat brainwashed, which goes to a lot of stuff that's happening now where people who might feel like, oh, life isn't fair, but now that I'm part of this group, it's taught me that I'm super special.
Yeah.
And that's sort of
That reminds me of something I wanted to touch base on at the beginning. I cannot believe that I have watched this movie as many times as I have and never noticed it, is when they first ride up on their bikes, Dutch offers Johnny a drink. He says, no, I'm smartening up. I'm straightening up. This is my senior high school. I got to get my ducks in a row. I want to get into a good college. So he has ambition and he's responsible.
Mm-hmm.
They give you that impression at the beginning. And I think that they diminished it a little bit with the aggression that he displays towards Elizabeth's character. I can never remember anybody's
name. Allie.
Allie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would this episode be any different?
Exactly. you think I remember their name, all of their names in this, but yeah, they diminish that moment where he shows that he's trying to be mature, or maybe it's supposed to be a juxtaposition of sort of, I'm trying to be mature, and then he goes and behaves fairly childishly towards Allie. That's then gets Daniel involved, quite likely unnecessarily. But Daniel also thinks that he's protecting this girl that he's now interested in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what? It makes me wonder, too, whether an earlier draft of this, Johnny was a little bit more of a gray area. And because they're like, no, this is going to be like a massive movie where we have to make it very clear to the kids that he's a bad, bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise the kids won't get it.
Which is weird because, you know, Daniel just moves in, gives creepy goo goo eyes to Allie, and it's only been a few weeks of breakup for them. Yeah, maybe that kid should have left well enough alone and minded his own goddamn business in a town where he doesn't know anybody and doesn't know the situations.
A few weeks breakup, if you're broken up, few weeks, I think it's fine. As a girl, I'm like, no, I'm out.
Sure enough. Yeah, absolutely. But
and Allie had made it clear that she was interested. You could tell she was interested in moving forward with somebody, whether it be Daniel or somebody else in the end.
Yeah.
But I think that, yeah, when you see that type of conflict, it's in your best interest to not get involved just because it's not your business.
Well, I have to say, speaking as a woman, yeah, again, not to get involved. But the other part of it, too, is the point of Johnny's conflict is to scare off any other man.
Yeah.
The point is to make sure it's like, no, this is my woman. Like, it's to wreck her potential to go meet somebody else.
Oh, yeah. No, he's definitely playing games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Total caveman. Oh, this woman mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I can screw as many other women as I want, but this woman mine. Like, it's dumb.
Well, speaking of playing games, let's play the trailer for the original Karate Kid from 1984.
This is it. This is the end of the line.
Telling me.
Did I tell you about the pool here?
For Daniel LaRusso.
Is this the only pool you guys got?
The future seemed far from terrific.
This place is a dump. You should go back to New Jersey.
Hey, I know it's hard, but we're not quitters, are we?
Until he met the right girl.
She's beautiful. I say she's beautiful. I think she's beautiful. Is that your address?
You got it.
But that only angered the wrong guy.
Definitely.
And his troubles really began.
Down to push it. Now you can pay.
Then, in one man, he found a teacher.
I promise to teach karate.
And a friend.
Fighting always last answer.
How did you do that?
Don't know. First time. Power. Whole body. Yeah. Make a perfect picture.
But how do I know if my picture's the right one?
If come from inside you, always right on. Lesson about the balance, not just karate, a lesson for whole life. Why train?
So I won't have to fight.
Hey, Karate Kid, let's take a move.
No points or no points, you're dead meat.
I don't have much of a cheering section.
You got me.
In the end, it will be in Daniel's hands. In his body. And most of all, in his mind.
Concentrate, focus, power. Remember, balance.
No mercy.
Columbia Pictures presents The Karate Kid.
Hey, what kind of belt do you have?
Canvas. You like? J.C. Penney, 398.
All right, that was the trailer for Karate Kid 1984, and Jeff Omega has entered the building.
I'm fine, Ma. I just crashed my bike. It's all fine. It's what you want to hear, isn't it?
Well, we've been here recording a podcast, so I didn't do it.
No.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay.
Are those bullies going after you again?
No, I could take care of myself. I just bumped my eye on my bike handle.
Okay, well, let's get into the cast here, and then Jeff can join in the conversation. The Karate Kid from 1984 was written by Robert Mark Kamen, who's got a pretty good resume behind him. He wrote Lethal Weapon 3, which was meh, but, you know, he wrote The Transporter, all three Taken movies, and The Fifth Element.
Oh, nice.
I know. That's a pretty good run there. Directed by John G. Avildsen, and not a bad run for this guy, too. He directed Karate Kids 1, 2, and 3. They gave the next Karate Kid to somebody else. But he also directed Rocky and Rocky 5. So this guy knows his combat sports.
A little bit.
I'd read that apparently this movie, that in its onset, he wanted to kind of make Rocky, but for teens specifically. So it was kind of like him redoing Rocky, but for a different demographic, apparently.
Well, you can certainly see that. We already made the point of one of the songs for Rocky 3 making it into the Karate Kids. So there seems to be lots of ties back and forth between these two franchises, at least lately. All right, this movie stars Ralph Macchio as Daniel, and of course you can catch him on the Cobra Kai series in it right now. Pat Morita was wonderful. Most people remember him from Happy Days, but he plays the Sensei Miyagi for Daniel. Elizabeth Shue is Allie, and we've talked about her a couple of times. First time was in episode 148.
Oh, with Piranha.
And again in 221, not so long ago.
Okay, I was waiting for Trish.
But Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah, there we go. And we had one more.
Oh, I didn't get the other one.
She played Bruce Willis's wife in Death Wish.
Oh, I always miss the Death Wish one. You're right.
Yeah, I think I got it last time when we talked about Adventures in Babysitting. I think I got Death Wish.
Yeah, I always miss that one. I always forget.
She's hardly in it, though. Yeah, she's in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can catch her in The Boys. Second season should be starting here pretty quick.
End of the month, yeah.
Yeah, and you can actually catch Cobra Kai on the end of the month on Netflix as well. So check that out. Martin Cove is Kreese, and we actually talked about him in episode 245 very recently.
Very recently. He was in Death Race.
That's right. And you can catch him on the new Shudder movie, VFW.
Also very good.
That I haven't seen, but I recommended it to you, so I'm glad you've seen it. I've been holding off for 31 Days of Horror with that one.
Nice.
That's why I watched it when I did, because I'm like, I'm trying not to step on you this year.
Yeah, I was looking forward to this one because that was the same director as Bliss, and I really liked Bliss last year. Randy Heller is Lucille, and you probably remember her from Mad Men. William Zabka is Johnny, as we've been arguing about whether he's the hero or not. Of course, he's in the new Cobra Kai series and was a series regular on The Equalizer back in the day, which is another kind of, it was a grittier crime show back in the 80s. I remember it being fairly dark at the time.
It was, and certainly the two movies.
Spawned the two movies, yeah. And he kept up on his martial arts, so, you know, I've watched, like I said, only the first couple of Cobra Kai, but yeah, he's still got it. Still looks pretty good.
Nice.
Ron Thomas was Bobby, and he was in a movie called Night Screams. Robert Garrison was Tommy, and we'll probably talk about him at some point because he was in the original Prom Night. And Iron Eagle, there's actually quite a few cast members who are from Iron Eagle because I do believe it's the same director as well. Mm-hmm. In fact, you watch a first episode of Cobra Kai, they're watching Iron Eagle. Chad McQueen is Dutch, and he was in Night Force with Linda Blair. Tony O'Dell was Jimmy, and he was in episode 212.
Chopping Molly played Ferdy.
That's right. Israel Jorb. I don't know how you pronounce this guy's name, who played Freddy. He was in Boogie Nights, man. Not a bad gig. William Bassett was Mr. Mills, and he does a lot of anime voices, like for big animes like fucking Akira. He's in some pretty legendary animes, but we actually also talked about him in episode 194.
He was in Invaders from Mars.
Absolutely. And
that is.
Yeah, and the last one on my list here before I decided to cut it off when we start getting into some real B-listers, we got Larry B. Scott, who's Jerry, and he was in Revenge of the Nerds Parts 1 and 2.
Nice.
Yeah. That's our Karate Kid cast, and yeah, Jeff, we were discussing this as a childhood favorite, but seeing as how you were like a zygote, when was your first watch of this?
Oh, I mean, I grew up watching this movie. It was a pretty popular movie, even when even among kids when I was growing up, a lot of kids watched it. And I also took Taekwondo when I was a kid, and so pretty much any movie with some kind of like contact sport, like, you know, karate or, you know, Taekwondo or whatever it happened to be, was pretty popular. But yeah, I love this movie, and it's been a really long time since I've seen it, actually, despite how many times I've seen it. And, you know, I've seen it a lot, but it's probably even so been more than 10 years, probably.
Yeah, I felt the same way. That was kind of how it'd been really long time. It'd probably been, because I don't think I've seen it since I moved out of my parents' house. I never wound up buying another copy or whatever. So, yeah, it's probably been like 25 years or so since I last saw this movie, which is quite some time ago. Oh, nice. I was really fell in love with it all over again because of it. And I've always loved Pat Morita. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. He was a wonderful Asian actor. He started out as a stand-up comedian, and I actually watched some of his, I don't remember him as a stand-up comedian, but I watched some of his act on YouTube. Ooh, that does not age well. It sounds like some racist white guy saying it, but it's okay when it's a Japanese guy doing it. Yeah, it's like, it's pretty cringy. But he was also a big star, you know. He was a major player in Happy Days, and he was the first Asian actor to lead in a television series. None of them ever lasted very well, but I particularly remember his second series that he led in was a crime drama called O'Hara, which I loved.
Oh, that was good.
It was good. It only got like one season, but I was really crushed when it ended, because that was post Karate Kid and post Happy Days. By that point, the whole world loved Pat Morita.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pat Morita really is incredible in The Karate Kid. He's very infectious.
He got an Oscar nomination for the role, and most likely a scene that the producers wanted cut, and thankfully the director fought for, which was Pat Morita when he's drunk and mourning the loss of his wife and unborn son.
That was really tragic. I actually completely forgot about that.
So had I, and man, still got me.
Yeah.
Still got me.
And, you know, it was equally as effective in the remake. I love the way they changed it and made it really powerful.
I wouldn't say equally.
They diminished it. Diminished it at the end.
Yeah.
But the setup and lead into it, I thought, was really, really well done.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was a powerful scene, and it's something that I think people take Jackie Chan, don't give him enough credit for, or for his acting chops. Mm-hmm. You know, as he's getting older, and to actually see he can perform a pretty moving scene like that, it's like, that tells you he's going to be doing this forever.
The whole point of it is just so heartbreaking. Like, he worked so hard on this car to restore it and then like break it. And he's just emotionally cutting himself all the time.
Yeah, you can see like he's so damaged through that movie, and he's just kind of existing before he meets Dre. So he's constantly fix the car up, and by the time it gets to that anniversary, and then he starts taking a sledgehammer to it all over again because of that car accident. And man, that's a really scarred person to put himself through that over and over and over again.
It goes into small moments too, like the way he changes the way he walks throughout this movie. Like, he starts off, if you watch him, he's like hunched over and just like broken. But by the time you get to the tournament, like, he's standing like a different man.
Yeah.
It's very subtle, but it's amazing.
Yeah, that's you're right. The subtlety of performance here where this young boy has brought him back to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that was something, and I you can step on me if you want, but I think that was something that was done better in the remake, believe it or not. Because you don't get the same sense that Miyagi's damaged. Not in the same way.
Yeah, it is a kind of a different... Well, with Miyagi in the first one, it's kind of like this tragic thing where, you know, he's like serving for America during World War II, and then his wife is moved into an internment camp while he's, you know, doing award-winning stuff, you know, being at war, and then she dies in an internment camp, and it's like, you know, fighting for a country that essentially killed your family. And it's like this thing where it's like, well, what are you going to do about it? He can only just remember. And it's really sad, but there's kind of a solidarity about it. But with the Jackie Chan one, it's like, this is somebody who is going through something that's unhealthy, maybe. Like somebody who's deeply damaged and like he hasn't resolved this thing within himself. And there's something that he still can't get past as a person. So it's like it's a little bit, they're both in different places in both movies.
Well, yeah, because Jackie Chan's defined by his tragedy, whereas Miyagi is, it's part of who he is, but it's not who he is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big difference between the two characters.
Yeah, because in the original film, it's Miyagi who's reaching out to Daniel. And I mean, he's resistant to help, but when he sees him, he offers the help. Whereas it's Dre who kind of prompts that and won't leave Mr. Han alone. So it's Dre kind of pulling Han out of his shell, not the other way around. Because that's a pretty confident kid in Dre. And you could actually say the same about Daniel. But, I mean, ultimately, both these movies are about bullying, which is probably why they have resonated for so long. Because it's always something that goes on in school. And it's always been a problem, and it continues to be a problem.
Yeah. Did you feel that the young man in the remake, did you get the same feeling, like, this kid is just mean?
Yeah, I kind of felt, I was saying this to Leah earlier, that in the first one, and I do think that, by and large, this has to do with the age difference in the movies. Like, in the first movie, they're old enough to have basically a rivalry, and you really feel that rivalry between them. And in the remake, because they're both so young, it's kind of like just Jaden Smith versus the sneering Asian kid.
Yeah, for the most part, he's kind of the motivations of this bully are pretty weak.
He's just cruel.
Yeah, you know, their fathers are friends, and he's like, hey, you should be practicing instead of talking to this new outsider. And I mean, this is a family that's moved to China, so it's out of a fish out of water story, too. I mean, it's actually more extreme than the original film. I mean, this guy's just moving across country. He's moving from Jersey to California. You know, it's still America. This is a family that's moved from America to China. That's some culture shock happening there.
And he doesn't know the language at all.
No. Yeah, because he didn't want to be there. And that's I think there are some fairly honest reactions from that 12-year-old, that a kid having been completely uprooted from his friends and family and putting it in an entirely unfamiliar situation, he gets rebellious at times in this movie. Quite often, actually. I mean, it's as subtle as him dropping his jacket on the floor, which I love that lesson that Mr. Han teaches him. And it's Jackie Chan's version of the wax on, wax off, but it teaches him responsibility, respect, but also the moves he's supposed to be learning.
Yeah, I liked that because, the whole child labor thing wouldn't have flown when the character's 12 versus 16 or 17.
Well, and mind you, at 16 or 17, Daniel basically gets a car, so it's kind of like he got paid.
Yeah.
I do think that me and Aaliyah were also talking about this, but I think the one big difference as well is just because you really see not only Daniel putting in the hard work, but you also see the breadth of the work that he's expected to do and that you're told that he does accomplish. And it's believable that, you know, after painting and doing certain motions and painting a fence so much would give you the muscle memory to do certain moves. But, you know, the jacket thing, taking on and off the jacket in a huffy way for 2 days definitely is not as believable for how good he got at kung fu.
Well, if anybody could turn that into a lesson, it'd be Jackie Chan, because he likes to like flip out of clothes and use them as weapons and things like that. And he's apparently he's the one who came up with the whole jacket on, jacket off thing.
Well,
so he found a reasonable explanation for it, I guess.
And with the bullies, that fight scene where he basically kind of just pits them all against themselves. Mm-hmm. Very Jackie Chan.
Very Jackie Chan.
Me and Leah just watched Step Brothers not that long ago. And I was saying how, because of the age difference of the remake, it's actually, like, it was really funny to seeing Jackie Chan beat on a bunch of 11-year-olds.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's just a little bit different.
He's giving them a spanking is what he's doing.
Yeah. Even, but, you know, they have, like, these cool action shots of Jackie Chan, like, you know, smacking a kid. It's kind of funny.
You know what? And honestly, sometimes with kids, there is a little bit of satisfaction I felt.
Oh, justified. I would have done the same thing if I was that good at kung fu in that situation. It's just, it's funny that it still works within the story, but the age shift just kind of makes it a little ridiculous out of context.
Mm-hmm. It does, but I like the way that they handled that, because, I mean, it's one of those few scenes in the original that makes me a little bit uncomfortable, is you have an adult male physically assaulting minors, right? I mean, they may be 18, but they're still...
Oh, young. Look who's come to Johnny's aid now. Now he's taken Johnny's side.
I've never said that Johnny was entirely wrong. And I there's another point in the movie where I think that Daniel was asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but
the shower. So
yes. When the he was down, Billy or Johnny.
Oh yeah. He had it covered.
He totally had it coming, because that was just malicious. That wasn't coming.
Yeah, come on. Johnny wasn't harming anybody. I mean, he was doing the most nonviolent thing ever. He was rolling a joint in the bathroom stall. That dude was going to be so mellow.
No, one big thing I noticed about. I mean, you probably talked about it. Oh, sorry. I'll let Sam continue. So you're in the middle of something.
No, it's just I think I made my point there is that in the remake they held that well, where he doesn't actually strike any of these young people. He uses them against themselves. He sort of redirects them so they're only hurting themselves, which is a good lesson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Miyagi jumps that fence and kind of blindsides everybody.
Exactly. Whereas in this one is like there's a sort of a lesson there of power misuses can backfire on you. Right?
Yeah.
But you can go back to the original, and there is that lesson where when it's done, it should be done. And, like, idiots with power can go way too far. Like, they could have put him, like, in intensive care. And that's exactly where he was going, and Mr. Miyagi hadn't intervened. And these guys, like, they are minors, but they are old enough to know better.
Yeah, Miyagi always makes a point of, like, fighting doesn't solve, isn't the answer.
No.
Fighting digs two graves. For both people, like, that's vengeance as a whole. So, you know, if he can avoid a fight, that's the best way to do it.
I do think that one big thing that the remake was missing that I always thought the original movie did really well was, you just really get the sense that these kids have a teacher who's drilling them in, like, almost military style. And there's a photo of him from Vietnam hung up on the wall, and he's, like, drilling him, and he's making all of them, like, these deadly weapons of kung fu, and he's telling them this ideology to, like, take your enemies down. So you get the impression that when they're, you know, really angry and they're going to beat up Daniel, that they're people who have more power than they know what to do with, and they're just letting their teenage whatever be directing this, like, deadly power that Mr. Miyagi is saying is, like, should be respected, but they're abusing it.
Yeah, this guy's giving people who haven't learned responsibility yet basically a loaded gun. Here's the weapon, but you don't know how to use it responsibly.
Yeah, here's an automatic weapon. Have fun.
Yeah.
It's not good, but it also kind of brings to a point, like, damaged people. He's a damaged person creating more damaged people. It's this horrible cycle that's just continuing.
Yeah, and you can see that culmination in the Cobra Kai series with Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Did any of you watch Karate Kid 2 after Karate Kid?
I watched all of them.
Because right at the very beginning of Karate Kid 2, it's like the fallout of that tournament. It's just like the teacher grabbing him and just, like, almost, you know, beating the shit out of Johnny.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really makes you feel a lot more for Johnny than, like, anything in the first film.
And then you don't get it to revisit Johnny for another 30 years.
Yeah.
It's weird how, yeah. how like Karate Kid 2 and 3 open with that. And you kind of like expect that you're going to get more of Johnny, but mm-hmm. oh no, we're going to fly to Japan in the second one. And the third one's going to be about Kreese, but he's not going to be in the movie very much. Cause it's going to be one of his cult students who's really rich and is going to go all like Jaws 4 on our people for no reason whatsoever.
Yep.
It's like, I'm going to go on this elaborate revenge plot. And it was just the most ridiculous thing. It's weird how that, yeah, they just get progressively worse.
One thing I do really like about the characterization of Daniel is he comes from a place where you genuinely want him to not be beaten up and to not have, because people are bullying him and they are like kicking a man when he's down. Mm-hmm. But as soon as he gets just an inch of ground, he like exploits it as much as possible and is like the most arrogant person about it. And yeah. is like, And every single time that he gets a win, he gets more and more inflated about it. And including in the second one, where as soon as he wins the tournament, he becomes like an even bigger asshole than before, because now he's like inflated again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you put that really well, Jeff, because that's the way I felt about watching this. Is like, you know, Daniel's not a bad guy, but he's still a bit of a teenage dick. Mm-hmm. First time, the scene at the apartment building where he kicks the gate open.
Yeah.
And the other kid asks him, well, do you know karate? And he lies. He says, right? He outright lies because he wants to impress this new person who could be a friend. And that's what teenage boys do. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Is you exaggerate your capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But that also came back to bite him in the ass when Johnny trounces him on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these new friends that Daniel's made are like, oh, who's this loser you picked up? Which is also very teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So I think that they handled being a teenager very well, even though most of the cast was over, were out of their teens at this point. mm-hmm. I think Elizabeth Shue might be the only exception. I think she might have still been a teenager in this one.
No, they all felt like teens. Like
they did all feel like teens, and they certainly captured what high school life in the 80s was. It was exaggerated, but in the mm-hmm. end, it was very much, they captured the personalities of teenagers very well.
And yeah, Daniel's just all about the high highs and low lows of being a teenager.
And they did that really well. And I think that's why it resonates still, is mm-hmm. because I don't think those emotions have changed very much. The circumstances might have, but that's how it feels to be a teenager, is everything's really, really good or it's really, really bad. There's no middle ground.
Yeah, I describe it as a very hormonal movie.
Yes, it is.
mm-hmm.
Even his response to when he thinks that Allie's getting back with Johnny.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that's very teenager. You go stomping off without getting all the information. But there's also something very toxic about Daniel in his relationship with Allie, because he gets mad at her and then expects her to forgive him because
he throws on the charm.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he wonders why she ran off with a football player by the second film.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, because he's showing a lot of that same toxic behavior that Johnny did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like very early in the movie, she comes up to him and she's like, oh, like, hey, I'm sorry about all this. And he's like, oh, hey, like, what are you talking about? Like, I wasn't even thinking about that. Like, you were right. And on that whole scene, that almost kind of like he takes that as setting a precedent that that's what she thinks about him being mad at her. So it's like this weird thing of playing into this precedent that she set by, you know, apologizing. And it's like super toxic.
Yeah, poor Elizabeth Shue. There are serious mm-hmm. problems with all the men in her life.
Really, there are.
But, I mean, you meet her father and you're like, oh, I see where it comes from.
Well, and that kind of brings me to some of the framework that extends into both films, where the love interest has well-to-do parents. I mean, the age difference is very obvious, but the structure, the skeleton is still there. You still have the rich parents, and Mr. Han still does the thing with the chopsticks with the fly, but in a unique way.
Yes.
I loved that.
That funny. Was so good.
little nasty. But they try to keep some of the bigger moments. We talked about the drunk scene of both films, and that's probably one of the more powerful ones. And in the moving with the culture shock and just making new friends along the way. Did anybody pick up as to why they moved in the first place?
Which one?
In the original film.
Well, Well, in the original film, it was because she got a job offer, presumably.
Yeah, but yeah, then, with the computer
the
company.
Didn't work out.
But she was working in a restaurant.
Well, no.
Yeah,
she,
no, but
she went. Yeah. She went to California for a computer tech job, but the company went bankrupt while she was moving. Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
She wound up having to get this job. If you have to really pay attention to the background conversation to catch it. But yeah. She actually does say, hey, yeah, I came over for this job. And then, of course, they went bankrupt. And mm-hmm. literally, she's standing outside with no job. And this woman comes out of this restaurant. And she's like, I quit. And she takes that job. That's how it happened. But it all happens in like background conversation. You got to be really paying attention to see it.
I can't believe I've forgotten that because I do remember that now. I mm-hmm. obviously wasn't paying attention this time, but now that you mentioned it, I was like, oh, I do remember that now. That she kind of takes advantage of an opportunity that wasn't there.
Yeah.
When her original opportunity was gone.
Yeah, they keep it a little more simple in the remake. Like,
yeah, she was transferred because of work. Yeah.
Yeah, transferred from her work. No craziness that happens in the background just for interesting dialogue.
Although the mom in the remake is definitely not, I mean, the mom in the original Karate Kid is one of the great 80s, you know, movie moms.
Yeah.
And, Jaden Smith's mom in this one did not even capture an iota of that warmth.
No.
Well,
I
don't. Yeah, I'm with Trish on this one. It's a very more modern family dynamic. I just don't think there was a lot of chemistry between her and Jaden Smith.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I thought she was fabulous. But there's no real chemistry between them, unfortunately, because she's a spectacular actress. So
yeah, but she was written as a stereotype as well.
Yeah, she was sad that there.
And I think that's the problem.
The romance between her and Jackie Chan, and when they went to that Valentine's festival, I'm like, oh, please turn this into a romance movie.
I thought that was coming. I would like that.
There's a couple scenes where, like, she was yelling at him, and then it cuts to Jackie Chan being like, ooh. And it's like, you know, you don't need that in this movie. You don't need to have a thing about, like, oh, man, your momster being a dick to you by being a mom, you know?
But that was setting up the whole jacket on, jacket off bit for largely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? He was seeing the disrespect and mom not knowing how to approach it and fix the problem rather than just yelling at her son.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of his way of teaching a lesson that could be used as another lesson. Like, man, he uses lessons upon lessons upon lessons in one thing. A lot of layers. Well, but so does Miyagi.
To be fair, yeah, he does. And I have to say, like, as his mom, like, I would totally get that annoyed by it because the jacket is literally next to the coat rack. It is literally right there.
The first time he did it, it drove me nuts. I'm like, oh, you little shit.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's exactly the emotion you were supposed to feel.
Yeah.
You were supposed to relate to the mother.
All right, well, let us cut to the trailer for The Karate Kid 2010, and we'll talk some more about The Karate Kid.
Welcome to Beijing.
I feel like we're on a quest to start a new life in a new land.
A life he never wanted.
I just want to go home.
This is home.
A place he was never welcome.
Look, everyone. It's the Karate Kid.
A teacher he never expected.
I thought you were just a maintenance man. Nice.
Good news is they promised to leave you alone while you prepare.
Prepare for what?
Tournament.
So the bad news is now they get to beat me up in public.
I will teach you real kung fu.
Pick up your jacket.
Check it on. Check it off. Check it off. He's strong.
Pick up your jacket. Focus.
I get it.
You're Yoda and I'm like a Jedi.
Miss Han?
Your focus needs more focus.
From Columbia Pictures.
Kung Fu lives in everything we do. It lives in how we put on a jacket. It lives in how we treat people. Everything is Kung Fu.
This year, a legend is reborn.
I don't want to be scared anymore.
Life will knock us down. But we choose to get back up.
I'm ready.
Okay, go.
You
You hit him, don't let him hit you.
What?
Remember, always strong.
That was the trailer for The Karate Kid from 2010 with the screenplay by Christopher Murphy, who created the Body of Proof television series.
And that's it.
That's pretty much his claim to fame right now, yeah. He's still pretty young in his career. Directed by Harold Zwart. And unfortunately, this is not the best of resumes. Agent Cody Banks.
That was fun. I watched it when I was a kid. I haven't seen it since.
Okay.
It's not good, but it's fun.
Well, yeah, I wasn't a kid by the time that came out, so I had no interest. The Pink Panther 2 from 2009.
Ooh.
The Mortal Instruments, City of Bone.
Oops.
Okay, I see a trend. There's a YA novel bit that's...
Yeah.
Oh, that's what he does.
He's supposed to be a YA guy.
Yeah, he's a YA guy, and this is certainly falls safely into that category, but I'm not sure if he's overly successful at it either. Although Cody Banks, I think, was a big hit at the time.
It was, and it, next to this is probably his best film.
Right. Well, I mean, Mortal Instruments had enough of an interest that it became an unsuccessful television series, too.
yeah, that was the books, though, not the movie. That made it. Wow. The books were beloved and they're so good.
That they forced them to try again and fail again.
Yeah.
Okay, this movie stars Jackie Chan, who we love. Everybody in North America will remember him from the Rush Hour movies. There's three of those, but man, he goes back a long ways. He was even in Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee, so he's been a martial arts favorite for a very long time. Jaden Smith.
Story.
Mm-hmm. Jaden Smith as Dre Parker, the titular Kung Fu Kid. We're going to call him the Kung Fu Kid because there's no karate in this movie. He was in The Day the Earth Stood Still and After Earth, and he gets in the way of his own career. He could use Miyagi right now.
His dad really gets in the way of his career.
Yes, well, his dad gets in the way of his own career too right now.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Jaden Smith is sort of Tom Cruising himself at some point.
Yeah, yeah. No, he's hopefully he gets out of this crazy teenage years. Taraji P. Henson was Sherry Parker, and of course that's the mom of Dre, and she was in Hidden Figures. Wen Han was Mei Ying, the young girl. She plays violin. She's got a little more to do here than Allie. She's basically replaces Allie in this movie. And she's got strict parents, which happens in China. You know, if you're focused on a path, they want you to stay really focused with it. And she's trying out for a seat in an orchestra. Rong Gang Yu was Master Lee, and he's got a resume just as impressive as Jackie Chan. And I've seen him in quite a few movies, Iron Monkey and Storm Raiders, just to name a couple. Thanks. But you should check out his resume. Lots of cool stuff on that list. Zensu Wu, it was Mei Ying's dad. And Xinghang Wang was Mei Ying's mom. And Zenwei Wang was Chang, the little shit bully in this one.
He just looks so angry.
I saw someone describe him as Dolph Lundgren, but if it was an Asian child, he wasn't old enough to shave.
Do you remember like the big thug from Bloodsport?
That's
right. Bolo Yuen?
Young.
And he reminded me of like Bolo as a child. Like I could see him turning into that dude. there's also an Asian dude who's got a thick jaw in Big Trouble for Little China. Reminded me of that guy too, Thunder. And Luke Carberry made his film debut as Harry, and he actually was a young white boy living in China at the time. So he was just there. So he wound up befriending Dre at the beginning of the movie, but much like the kid that befriends Daniel at the beginning of his movie,
disappears
into the background. He's there, but disappears into the background. I mean, I can see why they did it with this one, because he was an untrained actor. So let's not give him too much more because he sucks.
You know what?
It wasn't too bad for him.
He did pretty good.
Knowing that's you're like, okay, I can cut him a little slack. But if you're just watching the movie, you're like, ooh, that kid's not very good. And he's not, because he's not an actor.
Yeah, I tend to be a little more forgiving of child actors than I am of adult actors.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the experience. Some of them really impress you. Like the Fanning girls are hugely impressive, even as children. But for the most part, yeah, child actors tend to be hit or miss.
It's weird when I watched this kid. I think it's because I'd watched Along Came Polly recently, and I was getting a very strong Philip Seymour Hoffman vibe from him.
Hopefully as he gets a little older, now he's got a Jackie Chan movie under his belt. Not bad for living in China, so he might get used to it again as he gets older.
Nice.
Yeah.
He is older. He's like 23, 24 now.
Well, yeah, he would be, yeah, because this was like 10 years ago. So, everybody's a decade older now.
Apparently, they still want to make a sequel, I was reading.
Wow, 10 years out, really?
The most recent update was 2017. So fairly, at least 7 years post Karate Kid, they were still talking about it.
Well, I mean, it was successful. I feel like maybe time's passed it by already. But
yeah, they may have whisked their window here.
Yeah, I think so. Well, but maybe not, because Cobra Kai's keeping the theme alive. But I think that's the timeline everybody seems to be more invested in right now, being that it's got 4 films and an animated series under its belt before it. There's not near as much investment. And right now, I think Jaden needs to just shut up for a little bit, stay in the background, and reevaluate his career a little bit, and not come out like a Justin Bieber asshole.
I have a question, though. I haven't watched any of the Cobra Kais, but is there any sort of bits with like Daniel and Johnny with their kids? Does that ever?
I've only seen the first two, and yes, we do see Daniel's kids right now. I'm getting hints that the second episode, yes, there was. I almost forgot. Oh no, it's the third. I only saw the trailer for the third, but Johnny does have a son that he's estranged from. So he's the son's bitter because his dad's doesn't give a shit, right? Or like
his dad's bitter.
Yeah, his dad's been bitter in the gutter for quite some time, and it's really his own hatred of Daniel that kind of picks him back up again. He had a really bad day in that first episode.
Yeah. Does the end of the credits of Cobra Kai end with Pat Morita's voice echoing off saying, "There's no such thing as bad student, only bad teacher"?
No, but I have a feeling it will come up. They actually had all these camera angles that they didn't wind up using of the tournament. So there's all these new versions and new angles on the fight, and especially the iconic crane kick at the end.
Cool.
And we're seeing new angles on that scene that have been restored for the series. So
that's
if you're
awesome.
Really an old fan, you're going to really go down the nostalgia hole, but going, wait a minute, how did they do that?
That's so cool.
Because they wound up rescuing all this footage that never got used.
Man.
Well, I haven't seen it, but what I think I should say is that, like, if Johnny really wants to reclaim, his former glory, he has to go back to those bangs. I was so distracted by them this entire movie.
Well, you might be happy.
Yay, glorious bangs!
I will say that also one failing, I thought, a little bit of the remake is their version of the crane kick was fucking ridiculous.
Of which?
I disagree.
The crane kick at the end of the movie.
Yeah, it wasn't a crane kick at all. That was a backflip.
Yeah.
But was it supposed to be a crane kick?
Yeah, no, it was like the crane kick's been done.
Oh, yeah, but their version of that moment, including the implied mind control of your opponent and then him doing a backflip kick to the head.
That brings me to that I really actually quite liked some of the setup for that when they get into the Forbidden City, which was incredible that they even got to shoot there, because nothing had been shot there since like 85. So they were the first production to get in there in like 30 years. That was insane.
Apparently just because Jackie Chan was just revered there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got a lot of sway, and he would be their biggest star since Bruce Lee, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's got some pull, I'm sure. He had a lot to do with that, and what a gorgeous scene. I'm like, that's a lot of needless, like, hobbit walking padding, but goddamn was it nice to see all that on film. And when you see that monk lady out on that outcrop, with the cobra. It was symbology, was pretty cool. symbologically referencing the original movie of the cobra being Cobra Kai, and she's doing a crane stance while hypnotizing that cobra. And I liked the peaceful commentary that Jackie Chan, Mr. Han, made of that when they went to the Dragon Tears or whatever it was called. The fountain. The Dragon Fountain. And you can hear that in the Easter egg at the end of the episode, because I did clip that. But I thought there was some really cool Zen stuff there. And that in particular made the movie feel a little bit more of its own rather than just a shot-for-shot remake. I mean, they have a lot of more iconic moments in the skeletal structures there, but it does feel like its own little movie as well. It doesn't feel like let's redo every scene the same.
Mm-hmm. No, they did a good job of making a new movie out of the original.
Yeah.
It is interesting how it's like beat for beat the exact same movie, but other than beat for beat, it's different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, it has the same skeleton, but the flavor's different, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the easiest way I could say it. Like, they're both ice cream, but one's got chocolate chunks in it. I don't know.
Yeah, one's butter pecan, one's chocolate chip.
One's New Coke, one's Coke Classic.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, New Coke. Nobody's going to remember New Coke. Yeah. That doesn't bode well for this movie.
I would say the only unrealistic thing about that whole sequence was I kind of expected Dre to complain a lot more. Like, you hear him complain a couple of times, but I'm like, you're taking a kid up all of these
I
steps.
Really
you're gonna get a lot more complaining.
Yeah, I really enjoyed when he was just being a 12-year-old, you know. Yeah. He's on the train or he's complaining about steps. I'm really, really thirsty, super thirsty. You know, I really enjoyed him just being a kid. And there are times where I felt like the character's written older than he actually is. And when the kids just get to be kids, and I mean like all of them, that's when I really enjoyed it, because I think they were just doing what comes naturally to them. And they were just playing. Or if that's
a
difficult scene.
Did school go to the arcade?
Yeah. Yeah, did school go to the arcade? And that was a good moment too, because it was he was misinterpreting a lesson that Mr. Han had said about study too much. And it really, Han was just trying to get him out there so he could go get drunk and beat up a car. But he tells that to Mei Ying. And so they go and have some fun for the day because her competition's the next day. But then it gets moved up. So she almost misses it because of this irresponsibility. Yeah. And it's just bad timing. I mean, it's not really his fault, but he does make amends at the end with the parents who had forbidden Mei Ying to see him again. And she's willing to do that, but they had made this pact about, I'll go to your concert, and if you come to my competition, my tournament. I enjoyed that scene. That was where he really embraces his responsibilities that Mr. Han has passed on to him.
Well, the dynamic between Mei Ying and Dre is far more developed than the one between Ali and Daniel.
Oh, for sure. It's still like the original Karate Kid has some of the 80s tropes where, like, okay, we got to have the love interest, but we're not going to tell you much about her. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does matter. You know, we live in a more complex world and we can take more complex relationships.
You know, what I found really interesting too is when he's giving the apology to the father, and it seems to be like his apology where he's like, you should be a good friend, and to be a good friend, you have to make the other person's life better. And that seems to be a more mature way to handle any sort of relationship, friendship or otherwise, than Daniel could possibly comprehend in the original movie.
Agreed.
To treat, like, he couldn't treat Ali that way. He doesn't have the skills, but like, it seems like Dre does.
In the beginning of the next movie, you find out that he just completely, you know, it just doesn't work out. You know, it just flounders. He just loses interest.
Well, she left with another football player. That was the actual excuse. And if anything, he might even be a bit of more of a dick in number two.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are times where his temper really gets the better of him in town. And she's trying to keep the peace and keep him from going into places where he could get in trouble. But he goes anyway. So, yeah, I've having watched the entire franchise, I don't think he really got that much better through any of them. I would really say thinking. Hilary Swank learned more than Daniel did.
Nice. No, Daniel doesn't really learn the basics, sort of core precept of what Miyagi's trying to teach him, which is it's not about fighting. And all Daniel ever learned was how to fight. He didn't learn sort of what the intent of it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I don't think he learned it at all through any of the movies.
Well, I mean, the angry Jersey boy never goes away.
No.
You know, I think he learned a lot of lessons, but he's still a slave to habit.
Well, he kind of becomes a bully himself.
Mm-hmm. Well, as soon as he gets any inch, you know, in the original movie, as soon as the bullies can't taunt him beat him up until the tournament, he just waves his dick around. He's like, oh, hey, guys, don't walk in front of a bus next time.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
He would have deserved a smack for that one. I can see why they'd be pissed off. They all wanted to, like, but the sensei will kick our ass if we do it.
When Allie was like, oh, she's like sort of amused by it. I was watching that scene and I'm like, no, why would you be amused? I'd be like, oh, so you're just another version of the dick I used to date.
Well, apparently she realizes that at some point between the first and the second movies because she dumps him.
It's like she enables his negative behavior until she realizes that his negative behavior is not what she wants, strangely.
Well, yeah, she's got a type.
Yeah. He's kind of molding him into the person she wants him to be, but that's not who she wants him to be. And he's trying to, and I was saying to Aaliyah, it's like, man, like all the whole time Daniel's just like asking people to justify him. He's just like, hey, why did you date me, huh? And he's like, you know, I'm like all the time he comes from a position of being worthless and assuming that he's nobody. And it's like, man, get some self-confidence.
Yeah, and it's too bad Miyagi wasn't there for a lot of the dickhead Daniel moments where he would have been like, screw you, kid.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get Daniel-san, what the fuck?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's Miyagi who's the real star of these movies. I mean, he's so watchable.
Yes.
There's an episode of Community, which I watched. That's my extra prep, where it's a stage production of The Karate Kid. You have one character, she's playing Daniel, and then they have Ken Jeong is the other, he's playing Mr. Miyagi in this play, and the director, played by Jason Mantzoukas, is like just brutal to him. And at some point, Alison Brie is sitting there going like, well, why are you so hard on him? He's like, because he has potential. This story isn't about Daniel, it's about Mr. Miyagi. It's about this Japanese immigrant who fought in a war and lost his family in an internment camp. This is his story, his redemption. Daniel is nothing.
I think Hollywood's really missing out on a Mr. Miyagi movie. Like, he fought in the 442 in World War II. They were decorated more than the rest of the U.S. military, this division, for their bravery. And it was comprised mainly of Japanese Americans who've come over. And, I mean, even poor Pat Morita's family was interred when he was a youth. Mm-hmm. So, and his walk, by the way he walks, poor Pat Morita, when he was age 2, he had some sort of disorder and was basically hospitalized until age 11. Like, they never thought he'd walk at all. So, I mean, he himself, it would be a great story of triumph to go on to some legendary television and be a really great example of what Asian actors can do.
It'd be like Ip Man, but for Miyagi.
Yeah, but, I mean, to do a Miyagi story, it's set in World War II, and that heroism, oh my God, I'd be there in a minute. Yeah. I want to see that.
Absolutely.
Totally, yeah.
Especially when I learned about, like, the 442 was a real division.
Yeah, no,
Hollywood would make that happen for us.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the timing would be great for that now. There's still love for, you're kind of doing a peripheral movie from The Karate Kid. There's stuff that has been in the background of other movies that he's talked about. A lot of it actually came out of the next Karate Kid, the fourth movie, where he starts talking about his World War II background and this granddaughter that he's teaching in that movie of the person, like, he taught her grandfather karate and what that person taught him as well. You know, there's some really good stuff in The Next Karate Kid, despite it not being the greatest of the movie. It was probably the worst of the franchise, but it's still very watchable.
You think it could be a prequel to Million Dollar Baby at all?
I'm hoping Hilary Swank shows up in Cobra Kai, because she was in that movie, takes place in Boston. You know, it's so weird. They always like throw away the parents in the movies. You notice that? Mom is in the first one, but suddenly, oh, well, she's got to go do this thing and for the summer, and they get to go to Japan. So Mr. Miyagi gets to play dad through that whole movie. And it conveniently happens in every movie after that. Let's get rid of the parentals somehow, some way. I'm like, no wonder Daniel's so fucking damaged. The parents don't want him.
But maybe he was being kind of a dick. The parents were like, please give me a summer off.
I'm like, everybody Miyagi knows just wants to shove their kids onto him.
You know, one thing. So the inception of the remake for Karate Kid was Will Smith wanted to remake Karate Kid for his son to star in. So that's what happened.
He was the executive producer. He bought himself a franchise for his son.
Yeah, basically. He was like, you know what? Let's remake The Karate Kid. And I want it to be a movie for my Jaden. And then he made it happen. And then that's the movie. So that's why that's why all the characters are aged down.
Hey, Will Smith, now. Most people that are 12 just get Lego.
Yeah, you know what? This is besides the point, but I was reading that for his 15th birthday, his parents gave him Emancipation. And then he moved into a $4 million mansion by himself. So that's a thing.
And you wonder why he's a dickhead.
But
give them Emancipation? You mean you can just be like, sayonara to your kids?
They didn't even have a Miyagi to shove him onto.
But you know, that's why it's aged down. So because of that, there is some kind of weird things that happen, one of which including, you know, a 16, 17-year-old hanging out with an Asian man who's, you know, getting him to, you know, do some work and other stuff. That's not as weird as like an Asian man taking care of your 11 or 12 year old in a brand new city.
Yeah, the teenager, you could just say, is a summer job, right?
Yeah.
And for the most part, he is.
Yeah.
You're getting training while I'm getting my deck built.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was watching this with Val and Skylar, and both of them kind of went ick when he fixes Dre's ribs and puts his hands on a half naked child. It does feel icky, even though it's not intended to.
Yeah, there is, it's Reiki. He's using traditional Chinese cupping, which is very prevalent even in sports these days.
Yeah.
They still use that method for relaxing muscles and stuff. So it's similar to acupuncture. Yeah. So it's very legitimate, but they're just reading something and that's not there.
No, it's just one of the unfortunate things that happens when you age it down. That's just unavoidable.
Yeah.
I mean, it was kind of in humor, but at the same time, it was like, I can see how some people might be uncomfortable by that.
Other than the demonic hands of Miyagi's.
Yeah.
Just slide my hands together and warm them up. And I mean, you can say that's Reiki maybe, but you're a wizard, you're a sorcerer.
Fire in Jackie Chan's hands.
Witch, burn them!
Oh, but I did love the visual of, like, the fire in his hands.
That's cool. It's really cool.
That's cool.
And I don't know everything about that. I do know, like, the cupping, that's legit. I don't know about those fire oils that he was using, but that could be, too. I don't know enough about that.
Well, you buy those, like, heat packs that you, like, open up and, like, plaster on your skin. I'm wondering if that's just another version of it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Jesus, I don't know if you guys have ever done that at the bar where you've dipped your finger in Zambuca and lit it on fire.
Yep.
I mean, I've done it.
Put it in your mouth and lit it on fire? Super fun.
Yep. Well, I've never done it in my mouth, but, you know, that's what you do. That's what you do to take the Zambuca off your finger that's on fire. You know,
I've never done it in my mouth is almost as bad as jack it off.
Every time I saw jack it on, jack it off, made me think of a Mighty Boosh crimp. That was one of my favorites.
Just like, how can he gain strength from just huffing and putting a jacket? Oh, he's telling him to jack it off. That's what he does when we're not seeing him.
Oh, yeah. I never even went there, but damn.
Okay, then let's go with the Mighty Boosh one. He puts his jacket on, Jean-Claude Jacketty. He puts his jacket on.
Yeah. Wow, Jeff took it in the most uncomfortable place.
Yeah, this is a new one. Usually it's me.
Yeah,
you hear it. You hear it over and over again, and then you hear jack it off, and you're like, you know, he's 11.
Honestly, when you think it, if you think it, now I'm going to go into another direction for this. This sounds like some sort of, yeah, dirty, like hip hop. Pick it up, jack it off, jack it up, and put it down, pick it up.
I did like where he's like, something's missing. Attitude. Yes. That's where Dre was starting to get the point. Oh, I'm a dick. It took him several days of doing that before he realized.
In the rain.
It rained a lot while he was doing that.
Yeah, it did. And I like the bit there where Mr. Han keeps telling him, no face. Like, because he's making faces whenever he does martial arts. And then at the tournament, his very first sort of contact, they could catch him making the face.
Yeah, it's the close up.
Yeah.
It's the still. It's
like, I can't help it. Yeah. I really wanted to talk about the tournament.
Yes, let's get to the tournament. It
was fucking brutal.
Yeah, it was worse than the adults. It was a serious ass competition in China. Oh my God.
Like, it was brutal.
It felt like this was like in a hall gymnasium or something in the original film. This felt like it was like televised on TSN in China.
It looked like a Vegas event.
Holy Jesus. It was packing in the like something the size of the Tokyo Dome. I don't even know where they were, but Beijing, man, they probably have a pretty big venue for that.
You know, good stunt cinematography. Really good stunt cinematography.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they did do the over-exaggerated like strikes and stuff like that, where they flew back and stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's what you kind of expect from.
It's a hallmark of martial arts cinema.
Yeah, and I enjoyed that. Like, I found that the martial arts in this were more enjoyable to watch, even though I knew they were being over-exaggerated.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mind it in the original either. I thought Zabka looked really good for being like everybody in that original movie was untrained. So there was some stuff that worked out really well. The shot where Miyagi comes over the fence to take everybody out, when they were trying it with the original actors, it just wasn't jiving. And Pat Morita's stunt double, who's an actual martial artist, he's like, let me just do it with my students. We can get this in one take. And this is after like 14, 15 takes. Yep, they got it in one take.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's precise.
Yeah.
For an 80s movie, I mean, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the action scenes in The Karate Kid, as the original, but how they elevated them in the remake, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, no, modern expectation, you have to amp it up a bit, and they did. I mean, they made it look like a martial arts competition for grown-ups. There were some impressive moves, but, I mean, these are, in some cases, children doing these, but are really accomplished children. It's like, wow, and what are you guys going to look like in 10 years, man? Yeah. Yeah,
I also love the whole big screens are like 1 point, and like it moves around. It's like a Mortal Kombat. It's like I'm watching a video game.
And I think it was supposed to. I think they were supposed to give you that sense, because it is intended for a younger audience. So giving it that video game feel was probably very deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to know when they got the picture of Dre. When they show him at the end, they do that spinning shot where they're like going, "This is Dre. Like Dre has won."
Oh, yeah, I was thinking, like, did he have to, like, stand in front of a green screen and, you know, do a little photo shoot before everything that we didn't see?
Yeah, and some things like, you're doing a dolly shot around him so you can get that motion. It's like, what? That's something I would have liked to see. And like, yeah, okay, we got to do this beforehand. I mean, you guys just arrived. You don't even know what the rules are. In either movie, I loved when Miyagi stole the black belt.
Yeah, that was great. He's like, where'd you get this belt? Buddha provides.
Exactly. Oh, and I love when Jackie Chan's like reading the rules. He's like, what are you reading? The rules.
See, that I can get behind Miyagi and Mr. Han here, because one of the reasons I never took these courses is I didn't want to go to these competitions. I just wanted to learn it. Yeah. And so I really respect that mentality of just fucking teach me. I don't give a shit about the belt. Yeah. Like, the belt is just needlessly showing off your abilities. And that was something that does come up. Well, what's the point of doing it if you can't brag about it? I'm like, well, that's not the point, that is completely missing the point.
Yeah. What does the belt truly signify?
Yeah. Fuck all. It's, you know, it's not meant for combat and competition. This is a defensive discipline. So,
well, and it's
at least karate is.
Yeah, but I mean, like all martial arts, I believe, like there's the opportunity to like continue to learn. Like you get to like certain degrees of black belts. It's like, are you just adding levels so people feel accomplished? Why don't you just make it like an ongoing, lifelong learning thing? Because that's pretty much what it should.
And true martial arts, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would take a course tomorrow if I never had to take a belt. I could care less. I would be a white belt for my entire life, but my skill level might be higher. Yeah. And that'd
you
be
and
fine
me,
by
man.
Me.
Speaking
of, and there was skill levels, and that's was something that's always bothered me about both movies, is there's no way that either of these kids could have become that skilled, no matter how good the teacher, in the 2 months or 3 months that they had to get prepared.
Yeah,
I agree, but it felt more believable in the original one.
You know, this reflexive training with the muscle memory, I get it to a point.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's one of those you just got to set it aside. And,
oh,
you
for
know,
sure.
Yeah.
It's like just out of the realm of
my enjoyment of the film in any way.
Yeah.
In the remake, it's kind of like on both ends, the training is a little further away from giving him the skills, and the skills are a little bit more amplified. So it's like on either end, it's going in opposite direction, which like just widens the gap of believability for me just a little bit. Like I think in the original movie, definitely you couldn't be that good at, you know, karate from just doing all the stuff that he was learning, but it was just within the realm of believability that you could buy it. Just in the remake, it was like the training didn't feel as rigorous and the results were more impressive.
But Dre also trained when he wasn't with Mr. Han. Like he was always practicing and exercising. Mm-hmm. So,
well,
and there was no timeline either.
Well, and Daniel was learning from books.
Mm-hmm. And said he had already done some courses in the Y back in Jersey, in Newark.
Well, they had bits in the remake that I thought actually helped make some of it make a bit more sense, whereas they have the thing with the sheet where he's being taught how to anticipate the moves. Like, I mean, when you talk about the original where Daniel, you can learn the muscle memory and that's great. But if you can't anticipate, you don't know how to react. You don't know which move you're going to use.
Yeah.
So it's like reacting to another fighter is a completely different set of skills.
Yeah. It's not going to be Mr. Han going, okay, jack it on, jack it off, throw it away. That's not going to get you through a fight.
No. You can say jack it on, jack it off a bunch of times and the guy will think you're crazy and maybe run away.
It almost worked when he did the Cobra thing.
There you go.
I wasn't sure if the kid was being hypnotized or going, you're freaking me out, man.
Is this you flirting? What's going on?
But I loved that he was so enamored with that Cobra idea that he kept trying to do it like in restaurants and people just looking at him, what the hell are you doing? And it's such a 12-year-old thing to do, right? Just this is the new thing I'm obsessed with right now. He's drawing pictures of it. That's totally what a kid would do.
Yeah, and they did a good job of capturing those moments of him being a child still.
Yeah. And those are the parts of the movie I really enjoyed. It's just like, okay, you can still believe him as a 12-year-old because he is. And those things get pulled out in the movie too. You know, it's not 12-year-old playing 16 or 22-year-old playing 16 like the original film.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you still are constantly reminded that he's still 12 years old
and he's so little. He obviously was 12.
He was 11 when they were making it. I think he was 12 after it came out.
He must have trained like a motherfucker, because I mean, Jesus Christ, that's the most cut 12-year-old I've ever seen.
And you know what, the him being 12, I really thought it was, when you have the moment where he's destroying the car and Jackie Chan is just losing it, like his son was only 10.
Yeah.
Like, when you find out he's 12, I was like, oh, God.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, when you get those moments where, like, Jackie Chan's like, you need to stop because I don't want to see you hurt. And that's still his trauma that's coming out. You know, he's the son he lost. So there's some really moving stuff in there. Like, for other people who have not watched it because, hey, it's a remake and it's going to trash my original. Well, don't look at it that way. It's still a pretty decent movie. Not as strong as the original, but it's still really pretty good.
I'd say it's passable. Like, it was it was fun.
Yeah.
I caught myself being entertained in spite of myself.
Yeah, I would say the remake still surpasses the sequels in all regards. So when you think about, you know, if you're looking at a franchise per se, okay, may not be better than the original, but it's certainly better than the original sequels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. And yeah, I mean, they're not far apart, but no. I would give it to the original just by a margin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's play a game. So we got an IMDb rating. I'll actually tell you those. The original's got a 7.2 out of 10, which was pretty damn good. Okay. And it's had a budget of $8 million and went on to gross $91 million. And that's theatrical. And we know, Sam and I know, that was a big renter back in the day, too. So it was a huge renter. I imagine a minimum of another $5 million, pushing it over the $100 million mark just in rentals. And the remake has a 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb with a budget of $40 million with a worldwide gross of $360 million with a domestic U.S. gross, which would be U.S. and Canada, $176 million. And we know the Chinese market is a big market and Jackie Chan, so I bet you the same amount or roughly the same amount was probably from China for that global take. That's pretty good, but that's still kind of light for the Chinese market. So it didn't take off in the Chinese market like they hoped, but being a $40 million budget, that is far from a failure.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's be fair. I mean, when you consider the fact that all the bad guys in the movie are Chinese and mm-hmm. the hero is mm-hmm. North American, I can see why China's audiences maybe weren't.
Mm-hmm. They had a slightly different cut than the U.S. market, but they're pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Well, in both movies, including the Chinese one, the evil bully at the end is the one who wants to give him the trophy.
Yeah, so...
They both have those redemptions at the end.
That's also of like, well, if you want these bullies off your back, you got to earn their respect. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think the both movies establish at the end. It's like, okay, you fought me, you beat me, and you did it with respect. And both the students of the evil senseis even hit a point where they're like being told to do something that they know is wrong. Mm-hmm. And instantly regret doing so when they do follow those instructions. So they're not irredeemable either. And it's nice to see, even though their redemption arc is really tiny, that there is one.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot in the original movie when that guy takes out Daniel's leg the first time. Mm-hmm. He goes down and is like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, he instantly regrets the move.
And I forgot that happened. Yeah. I'm like, oh man.
Yeah, I've never forgotten that moment.
Yeah, and that's why that's so compelling. Yeah, that makes it so compelling. Okay, let's do the Rotten Tomatoes game here. What do you think the critics gave the original here?
I'm going to go with 76%.
Okay.
Jeff, do you want to go before me? I don't know what it is.
She's panicking.
You know, I would say that let's say 86% of people who are critics enjoyed this movie.
Okay.
I don't know. I think
you're not being judged, Trish.
67%.
Well, Jeff was closest, and the actual number was 88% of critics liked this movie. So Jeff was pretty on the money. Now, let's go for audience score here for the original.
I'd say probably, 94% of the audiences loved it.
Okay.
I was going to go around 91-ish, so pretty close to Jeff there.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to go the pessimistic route and 83%.
Trish actually wins this round being closest. It was actually 80%.
Wow.
Yes.
And I can see where the critics would be higher than the audience score because this movie was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Pat Morita, and that's a critic rating. So when you think in that regard, the critic probably will be a little bit higher. And who knows? You know, we've now had the worm has turned on poor Daniel as of late. So thanks to Cobra Kai.
why the audience rating is lower now.
It's starting to lower because they're going, fuck that Daniel. Okay, let's...
I think it makes it a more compelling movie, though, actually.
Yeah, well, the fact that you can have that argument about a character, that they've done it well enough that you actually question it, and for the most part, with the rules of karate that are laid out even by Pat Morita's character, Miyagi, for the most part, Johnny was following them. So until somebody got in his way or whatever. But I mean, he was not a nice person by any means, but
he was definitely being a dick.
He was definitely being a dick. We'll be clear. I don't like, I, when you watch these movies, you are on Daniel's side, but you can, when you start thinking about it, you're like, yeah, maybe.
Because, you know, people love a redemption
arc. So part of this indoctrination is problematic.
Yeah.
I'd say that it's a really good example of face versus, you know, versus heel in wrestling, where it's like Daniel is, you know, one of the great heel turns, and then Johnny is like one of the great face turns.
Yeah, though this is where I think, like in cinema in general, like, nobody's an unrepenting bad guy. That's a movie thing. That's a movie trope. So when you get, you have more well-rounded characters, you get a better story. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that we're getting it 30 years later, but we're finally getting that story with Cobra Kai. So and getting Johnny's redemption story. At least that's how I theorize that movie, that show's going to go. But maybe we'll catch up when we get to watch these next week. Okay, let's do the Rotten Tomatoes here for the remake. Sam, what do you think?
I'm going to go with 67% critic score.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 62% of critics, you know, gave this a somewhat passable, passing for good review.
Okay.
I'll go critics 70.
Okay. Well, Sam was really close at 66% is the critics score, which seems about right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just went 10. I should have just gone 10 less, just like it was on IMDb. I went 76, but I'm like, I'll hedge my bets a little bit.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, let's find out what the audience thought about this.
Oh, I'm going to say 54% audience score. Nostalgia.
Yeah. I'm going to say 49.
Ooh, nostalgia, really kicking the ass.
48, because people might get whiny about it.
Well, they liked it 1% more than the critics did at 67%. Really? So it's pretty even keel across the board. Critics and audiences felt the same, despite when you look at IMDb comments. I guess the ones that went over to Rotten Tomatoes were a little more forgiving. But
it's 0.2. So I think that the complainers are the ones who do the writing out their feelings.
Yeah.
People who like to just didn't say anything.
They just do stars and they're out of there.
It was okay.
Yeah. So what do you guys feel? How did you guys feel about it as a whole? Like, I think Sam was like, you like the original just slightly more.
Just slightly. And that might be nostalgia a little bit.
Yeah. I would say if the original didn't exist, people would still like the remake and maybe like it more because there was nothing to compare it to. Mm-hmm. Like that nostalgia lens really fogs us sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's necessarily, well, for me, I don't think it was nostalgia, but I think that I definitely like the original movie more than the remake, but it's a really good example of the original movie is really, really good. Mm-hmm. So why would you try to remake it? And the remake being pretty good in its own right. But again, it's a question of why would you even retread this territory?
Yeah.
Because I don't think that it was different enough to justify its own existence necessarily, even though Jackie Chan was great.
I think there were some choices in the filmmaking that to try to differentiate it probably worked against it, because there's this dark, muddy tone to it that, man, will kind of work against it when you have this gorgeous scenery with the Forbidden City and the Great Wall.
Yeah.
And why aren't these scenes so much brighter? Even that really spectacular park outside of the Beverly Hills apartment buildings in China.
I loved that.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny too. But I'm like, fuck, our parks aren't that cool. You know?
Beat for beat, it's the same movie and we talked about it. But it's like, what it also works against it is the original movie. It's an hour 49 roughly. And this movie, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes, and the extra half hour came from the same shots, but in slower motion.
Yeah, you're incorrect on the running time there. It's just a little over 2 hours for the original film.
Oh, okay.
It's still about 20 minutes longer, or about 15 minutes longer for the remake.
Yeah, it's all in the slow motion.
Yeah, well, the montages go on a lot longer.
Yeah.
There are a lot of montages in that movie.
I don't think it needs to be quite as long as it was.
Yeah. Well,
it could have been tightened up a little bit. I think that would have made it a little bit stronger, but
yeah, the montages are actually a little more successful in showing that passage of time. More, I think they are more successful at showing the passage of time between the school where they make the challenge and the actual tournament. And I think the time progression is portrayed better in the remake than the original. It just feels like it's not that much of time has passed in the original film. Not that it bogs down the film in any way, shape, or form.
No, I mean, I think you're right. You actually see Dre's progress through those challenges as well. Like, you see him becoming a better martial artist with Daniel not quite as much.
Yeah, I mean, they both kind of do the same things. I just think the remake having something to build, already built upon, got to do certain things a little bit better. It's not a better film. There are some things that they don't do as well. There was a scene I specifically found that I thought they rushed through. The no bad students, bad teacher scene. Man, that felt like it just like whipped by. I'm like, you're trying to make a point here and that you need to give a little breath to. And it's not nearly as effective as the original as a result.
Like, they basically took out all of the bullies, the extra bully stuff and all of the... Because the main antagonist of the movie, like, that you could say is a through-and-through 80s villain, is the teacher of Cobra Kai. But he's kind of like a Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life, where he's kind of this antagonistic person who's causing bad things to happen, but he's kind of in a place where, you know, you can't really deal with that guy. Mm-hmm. He's just there. And all of that stuff to give him in the original movie, they kind of took away to flesh out the love interest in the second movie. Mm-hmm. But I think it kind of undermined the kind of message of the original movie in order to have more romance between 11-year-olds, which I don't think was quite the right choice. But,
well, and speaking of which, when you talk about like bad teachers, this thing, when he goes into that kung fu school, how many freaking students were in there? Like, this place is huge.
Mm-hmm. And it's like an academy.
Yeah,
it's like a whole academy. And I was like, well, yeah, if you dig into the fact that this guy's got all this power, like, why wouldn't you try to dig into that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's lots more we could dig into with The Karate Kid, but unfortunately, it is time for us to close this out. But this is a wonderful one to do for our 5th anniversary, moving into our 6th year. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this 5-year ride. And here's to 5 more. Happy anniversary, guys.
Woo, halfway there.
What? Who's to say it's halfway there? I'm just saying another 5 more. There could be 10 more, 15 more. Who
6
knows?
Seasons and a movie.
By the time we get to the 10 years, we'll be halfway there again.
That's right.
We'll be doing this show when I have Alzheimer's.
But you know what? Hey, if I have Alzheimer's, here's what you need to do, and I want you to promise me this. I want to do another episode of several movies we've already done.
You try to get some redemption on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, it'll work.
Okay, well, that was The Karate Kid. If you want to see us do more 80s classics, just let us know. You can do that on our social media, at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion the Remake at gmail.com, and you can make your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, or fan challenges over at that email or those other places. Just let us know what you'd like us to do, and we'll consider it. Don't want anything too new if you're going to challenge us to remake something that wasn't so good the first time, that had a nugget of a good idea that we could build upon. And of course, we'd like to know where we could even find it. So those are kind of the criteria we're looking for fan challenges. But you can also challenge us to do a comparison. That's okay. Go ahead and do that, and we'll consider doing those as well. There's plenty more remakes to tackle, so don't be afraid to ask for one, and maybe we will move it up on the schedule. Lots more stuff coming up, and make sure you tell your friends and family about the show and just recommend them to one of our sites, where we've got lots of different links where you can listen to the show. We're on lots of podcast streaming apps, and you can find our central hub on our Wix site. Sam, what is the address?
It is invasionoftheremake.wixsite.com/podcast.
Excellent. And we've got some really cool swag for you that you can buy over at our TeePublic store. We've got shirts and hats and mugs and all sorts of cool stuff. Get your PPE masks. Got the cool one with the skull with the microphone that people are really digging right now. And you can also be that person who's in that thing that one time by wearing the shirt. And we've got our logo shirts and I Survived 31 Days of Horror, because that's a five-year tradition. Mm-hmm. And some more designs coming down the pike. There's some designs we're piling up to do the Jeff collection, the Jeff Omega collection. So that is coming soon. So look out for that. Now, I'm going to make an announcement for all of our listeners over on YouTube. Find us on one of those other streaming sites, because we will be ceasing doing full episodes over at YouTube. They're more trouble than they're worth. Frickin' YouTube. They can go fuck themselves. That's all I have to say about that. That's why I'm going to tell you to watch Cobra Kai over on Netflix at the end of the month. Instead There's of giving reason. YouTube a dime.
There's a reason for so many years we would always say, frickin' YouTube.
Yes, yeah. It is well-deserved, and I'm tired of fighting with them. So YouTube's going to be used for more for clips and stuff if we have time to make them. So keep that in mind. This will probably be the final episode that drops over on YouTube. So make sure you subscribe over on your favorite platform. Lots of are available. If you don't have a streaming device like a cell phone, they have lots of same iterations on your computer as well. So Player FM, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play.
Spotify.
We're on Spotify. And we're going to be on Audible and Amazon Music soon when they launch their podcast portal. And for our friends in India, we're now on Gaana, the largest provider in India, and it's nice to see you're discovering us there as well. So lots of platforms you can find us on. The links are over on our social media as well to other platforms. Just search us out on your favorite one. Just isn't going to be YouTube anymore, so please forgive us, but we're giving you fair warning, and you can move over to wherever you can find us, and trust me, there's no shortage of them. Okay, that is it for The Karate Kid. I really enjoyed visiting this 80s classic, and we will catch you next week. Well, we're going to remake something. Until then, I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I always come back as Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
Did you see the lady with the snake?
Yes.
She was doing the cobra thing. She was like copying the snake, and it was like right here, and she was like...
You did not watch closely enough, Xiaodui. The snake was copying the woman.
What? I don't get it.
Look, what do you see?
Me? Well, my reflection.
Yes. Now, what do you see?
It's blurry.
Yes, the woman was like still water, quiet, calm, in here and in here. So, the snake reflects her action like still water.
Like a mirror.
Yes.
So, she controlled a snake by doing nothing?
Being still and doing nothing are two very different things.